So I'm very happy to be here with you. It's been a long time since I've been in East London, so nice to come down the North Circular on a Sunday when there's no traffic. So we'll just sing a little bit, is that okay? And then I'll speak a little bit, and they told me everyone's got loads of questions. No, but I think it would be nice. I'll speak a little bit, but if we have Q&A, that might be nicer and more practical. So please do think of some questions that may come to your mind, and in that way we can have a nice discussion. Is that okay? Once there was a husband and wife, and they were standing on the side of the road, and then as they were looking, they saw another husband and wife, and that husband and wife was approaching a car. So as the one couple were looking, the other couple were approaching the car, and as they got to the car, the husband went around, he opened the passenger seat, and the wife walked in. So this other couple was watching. So the wife that was watching looked at the husband and said, "Just see, the marriage is new." And the husband looked back and said, "No, no, the car is new." It was an interesting incident because it showed how two people can see the same thing, but according to their vision, they can see something completely different. The Bhagavad Gita is an amazing book, not because it will change everything around you. When you read the Bhagavad Gita, don't expect your health to necessarily change. When you read the Bhagavad Gita, don't necessarily think that all the problems that are around us will disappear. When you read the Bhagavad Gita, don't think that a better prime minister will come to power. Not that I have anything against anyone politically, but... No, the Bhagavad Gita may not necessarily change what's around you, but it will change the way you see things. And the way we see things is very, very important. Because the way we see things determines what our level of happiness and satisfaction and experience of life is. So while everyone is training their body, who is actually training their vision to have spiritual vision, to see things in the right light? So the Bhagavad Gita in this way is a very, very practical book because it helps us to look at life differently. And if we look at every single chapter of the Gita, what Krishna is telling us is that the way the world sees things and the way a devotee or a spiritualist sees things often is completely different. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a wonderful verse, "Yanisha sarva bhutanam sanisha pasyato mune." What is night for the general people is the time of awakening for a devotee. And what is night for a devotee is the time of awakening for the general people. So one time, one devotee said, "Prabhupada, I'm reading this verse, what does it mean?" Prabhupada said, it means that the materialistic people look at the spiritual people and think they're mad. And the spiritual people look at the material people and think they're mad. So in this way, a devotee sees in a completely different way. Let's take the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. What happens in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Senayor ubayor madhye stapam ratham stapayame chuta. Arjuna says to Krishna, "Please take my chariot to the middle where I can see all the armies that have assembled here." So Krishna does that, and then what does Arjuna say? Vipatuscha sharirene romaharshascha jayate. I'm seeing all these people and I'm seeing that so much suffering will happen. My body is shaking. My hairs are standing on end. Gandivam shramshate hastat pakcheva paridayate. My bow, Gandiva, is slipping from my hand and my skin is burning. So in that acute situation, Arjuna says to Krishna, "I want to leave. I want to leave this situation. Put your hands up if any time in your life you felt, I need to get out of this situation. I hope you're not feeling that right now. Yes, sometimes it comes to that point which where we think, I just need to get out. What Krishna teaches in the first chapter of the Gita is, while most of the world is thinking, how can I leave this situation? You know what a devotee is thinking? How can I learn from every situation? So what Krishna says to Arjuna is that you don't need to leave the battlefield. You don't need to leave this dilemma, but what you need to do is learn from this. So I want you to stay here. Every situation that comes to us comes for a reason. Krishna sends us a situation in order for us to learn certain things. And if we don't learn those things in that situation and we simply leave, then you know what's going to happen, right? Krishna is going to send the same situation again. So sometimes, you know, there was a film once, Groundhog Day. I don't know if you ever watched it. It was before I joined the Brahmacharya Ashram, don't worry. But it's basically the person, he keeps living the same day again and again. And sometimes we think, my life is like that. I still keep facing the same challenges. Why? Because we're not learning from the situation. So now I want to say to you that it's not that sometimes you don't have to leave a situation. Sometimes you do have to leave a situation. But while leaving the situation, if it comes to that, you should also leave with some lessons that you've learned. Because if you just try to leave without learning lessons, then you haven't fulfilled Krishna's purpose. So we shouldn't just try to make external solutions when there are problems. We should try to make an internal adjustment. Like you see this in India. Like I used to go to Vrindavan in January time. So I don't know if you've been to Vrindavan in January, but it's very cold. First time I went, I thought, how cold can it be? I'm coming from London in the winter. And then I went to India and it was like cold outside and even colder inside because there's no heating. And then, you know, so then one time I went to Vrindavan and I knew I was going in winter time. So I took 3 fan heaters in the check-in luggage. I thought, I'm going to escape the chill of Vrindavan. So I came into the room, first day, the plug melted on the first heater. So I thought, anyway, 1 down, 2 to go. Second day I put it in, the plug didn't melt, but it cut out the whole generator in the whole building. So not only did my heating not work, no one else's power worked. So I had 1 heater left. And then I realized, I'm not even going to try and plug this heater in. Because I think Krishna is telling me, don't just try and make an external solution. Try to make an internal adjustment. Learn to tolerate. You see, in our world, whenever there's a problem, what we immediately try to do is solve the problem. Isn't it? I got a headache, take a pill. I feel cold, put the heating on. I feel hot, turn the fan on. If you look at in our world, immediately when there's a problem, what our immediate response is try and create a solution. But you see, in India, I noticed, and I noticed even in Vrindavan, that people don't necessarily try to make solutions. What they try to do is tolerate and internally elevate their consciousness. To learn to basically deal with the situation without having to make external adjustments. Now sometimes we may have to make external adjustments, but if we make an internal adjustment, then actually we'll be much more peaceful. So the first, one of the first lessons Krishna gives to Arjuna is that don't try and leave the situation. What should you do? Learn from the situation. See? So Krishna gives a completely different perspective. In the second chapter, Arjun is saying, I'm going to leave, I don't want to fight. This is not a good thing to do. What does Krishna say to Arjun? Asochyanan vasochastvam pragyavadamscha bhashashe. Krishna says to Arjun, you seem to be speaking like a very intelligent person, but actually you haven't understood even the basic points of life. Gatasu nagatasumscha nanuso chanti pandita. No one can actually die because the soul is just going through different bodies. So don't worry, there will be death. That's ultimately the inevitable course of life, but don't lament about that death. So the point here that Krishna is making to Arjun is that Arjun is deciding what he wants to do in life without first understanding who he is. So what happens sometimes in life is that we do the same thing. We decide, I'm going to live here, I'm going to do this job, I'm going to achieve these things, I'm going to live my life in this way without first understanding who are we, what's the purpose of life, and where are we going. So therefore, Krishna in the second chapter of the Gita says, most people act first and question later. But what you really should be doing is question first, act later. Like when I first started coming to Krishna consciousness, then first alarm bells went off in my mother and father, first one. Then it went to the extended family, the uncles. Then I remember one of my uncles came up to me and he said, sit down. So immediately you could understand it was going to be one of those talks. So he said, first degree. So I said, yeah, I'm at university, I'm studying. So he wanted to make sure I was going to finish my studies because he saw I was getting more involved in Krishna consciousness. So he said, first degree. Then nokri. Work. Then you know what comes next after that. I don't need to tell you. You know better than me. He knew it. He sensed early that I was going to cut the trajectory of activities and go on an exit route. So years later I met him and he said, you didn't follow. I told you first degree, then nokri, then chokri. I said, look, degree I did. I got a 2-1 from UCL. I did my degree. He said, but nokri? I said, I work for Prabhupada. He's my boss. That's my career. He said, no, that's not a proper job. How much do you get paid? I said, I don't know, I don't get a salary, but the retirement plan is out of this world. And then he said, oh, this is all word juggery. Okay, but chokri, you didn't do that one. I said, I'm engaged in Krishna's service. So, but his whole point was, first do all of these things and then ask about religion later. Ask about God later. Ask about, all of these bigger questions later. Krishna says to Arjun, no. Ask those questions first. Because once you know who you are, where you're going, what the point of life is, then it makes it easier to make every other decision in life. Do you sometimes find it hard to make decisions? Everyone finds it hard to make decisions. The reason why it's hard for us to make decisions is because we haven't fixed what is the goal of our life. If we know the goal of my life is to go back to home, back to Godhead, to attain love for Krishna, to get rid of lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, then every time you have to make a decision, it becomes much easier because you just ask yourself, which decision will help me to reach this goal? Then it should become much easier to make decisions. So what Krishna says to Arjuna is, ask the questions first and make the actions later. So like this, you see, every single chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is basically changing the way we look at life. And shall I tell you the ultimate teaching that the Bhagavad Gita is giving? I would sum it up in one line. Don't try to be happy. Don't try and be happy. The Bhagavad Gita is teaching us, don't try and be happy. Try to serve. Right? Now I want you to think deeply about this. If we understand this statement, it will change the way you function in life. What Krishna is basically saying in the Gita is, don't try to be happy. Try to serve. I'll tell you a story. Godruma, one of our devotees at the manor, he told me this story. Once he was out distributing books. So he gave one book, one man, he was very happy. And then he said, who are you guys? Godruma said, we are monks. We live in a monastery, but we basically, at the moment, we're living in a van. So they were living in a van. And the devotees were going town to town, distributing books. So he said, we're monks, we live in a van, and we just go town to town distributing books. He said, I don't believe you, I don't trust you, you're making it up, all this stuff. So Godruma and this other devotee said, if you don't believe us, come back to our van and you'll see. As soon as you step into the van, you'll understand we're monks. you go in and... So anyway, he brought him to the van, this man. So he opened the van. Immediately when he opened the van, two smells came. First one was khichdi. So he wasn't convinced then, but then the second smell was incense, heavy incense. So he goes, oh wow, incense, okay, well, a bit more convinced now. Then he walked into the van, then not only was there incense, then he looked around and there were all the pictures of Krishna. So I was like, wow. Then all so many different books. He said, wow, yeah, incense, pictures of God, books, yeah, it looks like monks. Then he began looking around the van, and what the devotees had done is they had put up different verses from the scriptures. You know, like you cut out a verse and stick it. So he began walking around the van looking at all these different verses. Then, you know, one verse, you know, for the soul there is neither birth nor death. Well, sounds like a verse of the monks, you know. So he was getting more and more convinced. Then he came to one verse. So this man, just straight off the street, he came to one verse. And this one verse was a verse from Prahlad's teachings. I think Prahlad's teachings to his school friends. So the verse was, Sukhaya dukhamokshaya sankalpa iha karmina sadapnoti haya dukham Anihaya Sukhavrata. Now this is an amazing verse. Prahlad Maharaj says, so he was reading this verse. Prahlad Maharaj says, Sukhaya Dukha Mokshaya Sankalpa Iha Karmina. Every single person in this world is acting in such a way to do two things. Dukhaya, they want to minimize their distress, and Sukhaya, maximize their happiness. So everything we do in life, Prahlad Maharaj says, is to maximize happiness and minimize distress. So he looked at that. He said, wow, that's amazing. But then he read the second line. The second line of the verse, he read it and it blew his mind. What does Prahlad Maharaj say in the second line of the verse? Sadapnoti hayadukam anihaya sukhavrata. In the second line of the verse, Prahlad Maharaj says, one is happy in this world so long as they do not seek happiness. The moment one begins to seek happiness in this world, they become miserable. And he read that and he was like, whoa! Like, something hit him about that. He said, that makes so much sense to me. Anyway, and then he sat in the van and then they had a whole discussion on that point. But it's an amazing point. The moment that you try to seek happiness, you know what? You won't find happiness. But the moment you decide to become a servant, to serve, then from that service, all happiness will come. Put your hands up if you feel like it's difficult to be a servant. Oh my God, it's only me. It's difficult to be a servant, isn't it? Imagine you're serving someone and you're just giving your time, your energy and energy, and they don't do anything back to reciprocate. How will you feel? Will it be easy to keep serving them? Service is difficult. It's difficult to be a servant because when you're a servant, the first thing is you have to be humble. Are we humble? Even in the morning, every day, you know, we bow down and we say, you know, Trinada Pisuni, one should be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree. One time one devotee was bowing down, Trinada Pisuni, and then as he got up, someone stepped on his thigh by accident and immediately there just started. It was like, hang on. It seems a bit of a disconnect between the verse and the action. It's not so easy to be humble. It's not easy to be humble. But if you want to be a servant, you have to be humble. If you want to be a servant, you have to be ready that there may not be reciprocation. Sometimes you serve. Have you ever served someone and they don't appreciate it? Have you ever done some service and nobody recognizes it? Have you ever done some service with all good intention and someone accuses you of something different? Sometimes it's difficult to be a servant because you won't always get results or reciprocation. It's difficult to be a servant because to be a servant you have to put in effort. Sometimes we're very lazy. Sometimes we wake up in the morning and think, I don't want to do that. So for all these reasons, it's difficult to serve, actually. It's more easy to enjoy. But what the Shastra, what the Bhagavad Gita is basically teaching us is that if our life is based around enjoyment, then ultimately we won't find happiness. But if our life is based around service to others, then all happiness will eventually come, even if it's difficult in the beginning. So somehow in our lives we must become servants of Krishna. You see, these deities are beautiful, isn't it? So one time there was a group of devotees who were having a debate, which are the most beautiful deities in ISKCON? So someone said, Gokulananda. No, Radhalandanishwara, Prabhupada said. No, Radhashyamsunda in Vrindavan. Radhashyamsunda in Vrindavan is said to be the source of all other deities. So like this, there were different arguments going on. And then one devotee stood up and said, you're all wrong. And he said it with such a conviction, everyone looked at him and said, okay, so what's your answer then? He said, the most beautiful deities are the deities that you serve with your heart. If you serve Gokulananda with your heart, then he will appear very beautiful. Whichever deity you serve with your heart, the Lord will reveal his beauty through that deity. So service is what allows us to appreciate the beauty of Krishna. Service is what will allow us to feel Krishna's love. Service is what will help us to feel Krishna's presence in our life. So therefore, we should try to be servants. We should try to do as much service for Krishna as we can. And a devotee is like that. They're not just trying to do the minimum. You see? Have you ever thought why gambling is... why is gambling not allowed in Krishna consciousness? There could be many answers. This is what occurred to me. In gambling, what is the mentality? The mentality of a gambler is minimum effort, maximum gain. What is the mentality of a servant? Maximum effort, minimum gain. So it's not that we don't gamble just because we're going to lose lots of money. It's not just that we don't gamble because, you know, for many other reasons or sinful reactions or whatever. We don't gamble because it creates a mentality which is completely opposed to the mentality of a servant. So we must be in this mood of being a servant to try to do as much as we can for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada was told by his spiritual master to preach Krishna consciousness in English. So he could have wrote one book in English and stopped. He did it. But did he stop at one book? He wrote many books. Prabhupada was told to go to the Western world. He could have gone to New York and then just stopped there. But he didn't. He went 14 times around the world. One devotee said, Prabhupada, I want to stay fixed at your lotus feet. Prabhupada said, it will be very difficult because I'm always moving. He was constantly moving. Prabhupada, his spiritual master, told him, you should teach people about Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada made one temple, made, you know, many devotees in that temple. He could have stopped there, but he didn't. He opened 108 temples. He initiated thousands of disciples. So Prabhupada was just giving more and more. So understand this sutra in your life. The more you become a servant of Krishna, the more you become a servant of the devotees, the more you become a servant of the people out there who may not even be devotees, but you try to help, you will experience more and more happiness in your life. We find ourselves by thinking of others. So this service is basically the essence of our life. And that's what basically Krishna is teaching us in Bhagavad Gita in this way. So, does anyone have any questions? Comments, anything about service, about happiness, about spiritual life, anything you may want to clear up?
You mentioned about not leaving the situation but learning from the situation. How can we make that transition from wanting to leave and taking the lesson instead, so that we don't walk away from the potential of that situation that Krishna has allowed and created. So how can we have the best mood and actually learn from something?
Yeah, so how do we better learn from situations and not just try to escape when it becomes difficult? Two things are necessary. The first thing is that we have to become deeper thinkers in our life. You see, actually, most people are not really thinking. Thomas Edison, you know, he invented the bulb, right? He said 5% of people think, 10% of people think they think, and 85% of people would rather die than think. So we don't like to think, actually. How many of us actually think deeply about life? Like, that's why if you write a diary or write a journal or write your reflections, that's very, very nice because it forces you to actually think. So most people are not thinking. So when a difficult situation comes, they're not able to see it from a deeper perspective because they haven't trained themselves in deeper thinking. So by reading Shastra, by becoming very introspective, it helps us when we go through difficult situations to think about it more philosophically. You see, the Gita and philosophy is like a plane. When a plane takes off and goes high, then all the things on the ground which seemed very, very huge from the sky don't look so big anymore. So when you elevate your consciousness by becoming a much more deeper thinker, then all of the problems that you face, you put them in perspective. They don't actually seem so big anymore. But sometimes what happens is that our emotions overcome even our intelligence. So someone can be a deep thinker, they can be a philosophical thinker, but when the emotions of the situation becomes too much, even their intelligence gets covered, isn't it? So then what do you do in that situation? So therefore, the other thing that we need to develop, along with becoming more thoughtful devotees, is we need to have good relationships. Because what other devotees do is they help you to see your situation outside of your own emotions. So when we go to a devotee and say, I'm facing this, I'm going through these challenges, what do you think? What is Krishna trying to teach me? Then they can give you more perspective. So these are maybe two things that you can do which will help you to learn from situations more. Krishna is giving us messages at every moment. But are we ready to pick up on the messages? Yeah. Like, Krishna is reciprocating with us all the time, but we don't see it. Like, a man was late for his interview. So he was... He couldn't find a parking space. So he was going through road, you know, trying to find a parking space. Then he began praying, "Oh God, let me find a parking space. Let me find a parking space." So he was praying like this, "God, help me, help me." And then finally he got down the road and there was a space and he looked up at God and said, "Don't worry, God, I found one now." So that is our situation. That we're not seeing Krishna's hand. On one hand, we're theoretically praying, but are we actually seeing Krishna's hand? We're not able to see because we haven't developed this deeper thinking, and we don't have good friends around us who can help us to see Krishna's hand. So Krishna is very, very present. Krishna is teaching us at every moment, but oftentimes we're not able to hear. So we should. Like once two people were walking in Times Square. See, I don't know if anyone's been to Times Square in New York. It's like chaos, loud. So many people, horning, cars, so many things. So these two people were walking, and these two monks were actually walking. And as they walked past one bin, one monk just stopped. And he said, "Can't you hear that?" It's like the other one couldn't figure it out. And then this monk went behind the dustbin, and there was some small like a rabbit or something like that, that had been hurt. And it was like, it was squealing, like just tiny. Like, could hardly hear it. So this other monk said to him, it's amazing. How in the midst of all of this noise did you hear that rabbit? So then this monk said, it's easy. They walked back into the square, and what he did was he dropped one coin on the ground. And as he dropped one coin and it made a slight ding, everyone stopped and looked around. Like, was that my money? Whose money is that? Everyone looked around. The level of sound of that coin and was the same. But basically, he looked at the other monk and he said, you will hear what you want to hear. Because one person's heart is filled with compassion, they will hear the sound of someone suffering. Because another person's heart is filled with greed, they will hear the money dropping. So is our heart filled with the desperation to have Krishna, to go back to Godhead? If that desperation is there, then you'll pick up on all of the messages. But if your heart is filled with a different aspiration, then Krishna will be, the message will be so loud in front of you, still you won't get it. So we must desire to hear Krishna. So anyway, those are some thoughts on that. Yes. Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. You can't teach someone compassion. Actually, you can't teach anyone any quality. Like, you can't awaken these qualities within anyone. You can only inspire. Can you make someone humble? Can you make someone compassionate? Can you make someone kind? No. But what you can do is, number one, be a good example yourself. Number two, you can tell them the benefits of living in such a way. And then ultimately, someone through their own intelligence must realize that this is a better way to live. This will actually bring me more happiness if I live with compassion, if I live with humility, if I live with kindness. But the world is basically teaching something different. The world is not really teaching that, isn't it? The world is teaching you to climb to the top, whatever it takes. The world is teaching you not to be a giver, but to be a taker. So that's why spiritual life is so important, because otherwise people are going higher and higher and higher. They're achieving so many things. But because their character is not evolving, because they're not developing these qualities, so therefore they have everything but they're miserable. So how will we actually develop compassion? Okay, so here's the real point of how to develop compassion. You can only develop compassion for others when you are fulfilled yourself. Generally, because we're not fulfilled, it's very difficult to be like compassionate servant to everyone. Because you're thinking like, I need some for myself as well. What about me? But when you're so full in yourself, in terms of your soul, you're experiencing so much inner happiness, you can actually give yourself freely to others without consideration of return. And that's real compassion. So how was Srila Prabhupada able to just be such a giving person? Because he was so deeply connected with Krishna. So sometimes we go out on the street and it's like, okay, now we're going to distribute books and be like really compassionate to others. But sometimes we're out there on book distribution and we think, these guys have got a better life than me. Like, why am I out here in the cold, in the rain, doing this? They seem to be having a better time than me. Because we're not experiencing the fulfillment within, it's very difficult to be compassionate to others. So therefore, compassion only really arises in the heart of a fulfilled person. And the only way that we can get fulfillment is by being spiritually connected. So that's how we ultimately develop compassion, by actually becoming Krishna conscious. Yeah. Yes.
So let's say this, talk about us running service all the time. If I remember correctly, Prabhupada always say that if you don't engage in Krishna service, you're always engaging in some service of another.
Yes.
It might be the husband, the wife, maybe the children. So how do we dovetail that into Krishna service?
Thank you, very nice question. Service doesn't just mean direct service to Krishna. One time there was one disciple of Srila Prabhupada, she was worshipping the deities. So then at one point in her family life, she was pregnant, and then she gave birth to a child. And then she came to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada said, for the past few years you've been worshipping the deity, now your child is your deity. And Prabhupada said, my instruction is, take care of your child as your deity. That is your service to Krishna. So service to family, service to friends, service in so many other realms can also be part of devotional service, as long as we connect it. So when we connect all aspects of our life to Krishna, then even those aspects of our life which we're rendering service to become devotional service. But when we're expending energy in areas of life that have no connection to our spiritual development, or no connection to actually helping us progress on our path back to Krishna, then it's not really service. So service means anything connected to Krishna. And we have to learn the art of how to connect everything in our life to Krishna. Yeah. Yes?
Just on the point on service, so often we're quite limited to how much service we can do due to various responsibilities. So how is it that, what's the best way you're doing things so it's not mechanical, and you make a deep connection to Krishna while you're doing the service? Because you can do, be in front of the deities and just wave a few things around and you're done. So how do you make that deep connection so you feel that you're actually making some elevation and, you know, connection to Krishna in the end of service?
So I'll answer two parts. First, you're saying there's limitation to service. And then the second part is, you're saying that when we do end up doing service, how to make sure it's not mechanical. So I think the biggest limitation to service is, begins with T, time, isn't it? How many of you feel like you could do with an extra hour in the day? Yeah, join the club. I let you into a big secret. This is my entire seminar on time management, is basically just this. For those people who say they don't have time, my point is this. Some of you will have this much time in your life to serve Krishna, because the other, you are engaged in other things, and some people may have this much. Now, there's one secret. If the time that you do have, that Krishna has given you, you fully utilize that time, you know what will happen? Two things will happen. When you fully utilize the time that you have, even if it's only 1 hour in a week, if you fully utilize that time for service to Krishna, two things will happen. The first thing is that Krishna will begin to empower you so you can actually do more service in that time. And the second thing is Krishna will begin to open up opportunities for more time in your life, because He sees you want to serve. So our basic problem is that we are pushed by time. But shall I tell you a bigger problem? Is that we waste time. What are the biggest time wasters in life? Phone, Netflix, television, YouTube, Facebook. One devotee just sent out on the Brahmachari WhatsApp group, ironically. Get off Facebook and put your face in a book. Okay. So we're wasting so much time. You know, like I always remember, we had an amazing devotee at the manor. Her name was Mother Kalangana. And I feel blessed because I saw her every day. I lived in the same building as her. Pure devotees exist in the world, we've seen. Now she was, I remember I would come back from programs, sometimes 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock at night, and she would be up chanting. She'd be the last person to go to sleep and the first person up. She got to the age of about 80. Her body was basically just... But she just continued on. She used to have this apron. And on the apron it said, Krishna's little helper. So she was just there, and she never expected... She was making Krishna's Mangalarti sweets every day. One time she wanted to make this sweet, special sweet for Krishna. It's called Gokul sweet. Yeah, have you ever tasted that sweet? So it's like a cocoa powder like that. Carob, sorry, not cocoa, carob. So anyway, somehow or other she couldn't get this recipe right. She just wasn't working properly. Then she said, I made a prayer to Krishna that please tell me the recipe for this sweet. And if you tell me the recipe for this sweet, then I promise I will never eat the sweet in my life for my own. And like that, she finally got the recipe and she never ate that sweet. So in her final days, she made an amazing statement that I always remember. She was in the manor, she was living there. She was going to pass away in the manor, so all the devotees were there chanting. And then someone came and said, Mother Kalangana, are you? Do you feel any fear or any anxiety about, you know, what you're going through, about impending, leaving this world? And then she made an amazing statement. She said, I have no fear. I know Srila Prabhupada will come at the end of my life and save me because I never wasted any time. She said, I never wasted any time. And when she said that, I thought to myself, will I be able to say that at the end of my life? That I never wasted any time. She said, because I never wasted any time, I know that Srila Prabhupada will come and help me. So, the fact of the matter is, although we say we don't have time, we're wasting a lot of time. So, try this formula. Utilize whatever time you have fully and just see how Krishna begins to expand time. Because what does Krishna say? Kalosmi, I am time. So Krishna can do anything. So that's my first point on time. Anyway, we have to make time. There was a cartoon once, and you know, in the first cartoon, it was a young couple, and then they said, no time for spirituality, too much in love. Then the couple had babies, and you know, and the job, and the man had a briefcase, and it said, no time for spirituality, too many responsibilities. And they became old, and then the kids left, and then it was a picture of them as a, you know, grandma and granddad in the couch watching TV. No time for spirituality, too many health difficulties. And then in their grave, too late. Too late. So we have to make time. And even if we think we can't make time, are you utilizing your time? Then you'll be able to see how more and more time opens up. So that's one thing. And then the second point you're making is that how, when we do service, do we avoid becoming mechanical? That's why we do sadhana. That's why we read about Krishna. That's why we discuss with others about Krishna. Because when we're doing service for Krishna, it will be very difficult to think of Krishna, to do it with in consciousness of Krishna, if we're not reading about Krishna, discussing Krishna, talking to Krishna, praying to Krishna. Therefore, along with service, we must have good sadhana. And sadhana, in one sense, is a service. So service without sadhana will become mechanical. And simply doing sadhana without service will also not be complete. Therefore, service and sadhana must go together, and then it will become more meaningful. So these are some points that we can think about. Any other? Yes.
You mentioned about being humble. I find it difficult to differentiate between being humble with spiritual, right-minded people and out there in the real world, in the material world, where unfortunately we have to connect with the material world. It feels like sometimes when you're too humble, people taking advantage of you. So how do you behave and how do you differentiate?
Yeah. Arjuna was humble, but when he was fighting on the battlefield, he was fighting. So Srila Prabhupada said, a tiger on the chase and a lamb at home. So when we're in the world, sometimes we have to function, we have to be assertive, we have to, you know, if someone's doing something wrong, we have to say, and sometimes even within the devotee circle, sometimes you may have to tell someone something if they're doing something wrong. Does it mean that we're not humble? No, humility means that I'm not doing anything with myself in the center. I'm doing it with Krishna in the center. That's what it means to be humble, to keep Krishna in the center. So that sometimes even if you have to do something which is strong, you do it with Krishna in the center, not your own ego in the center. So, Prem Nishinga read out Sutapa's head of this and head of that and regional coordinator and this and that. So there's a lot of management in life, in my life. I'm not a good manager. So that's difficult because you got to tell people things they don't like. So, but you can't just be artificially humble. You got to deal with things. But we do it as a servant of Krishna. And that's why we do it without... It's not about me. I'm not telling you this because it's about me. It's about my ego, my pride. I'm doing this because it's a service. and because we have to do the best we can. So like this, somehow or other, humility means just to take ourselves out of the center. I don't know, does that help?
Yeah.
So when you're at work, when you're doing these things, you may have to exhibit some of these things. But in our hearts, we realize, yes, I must be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree. But then in practice, in practical situations, we have to deal accordingly like that. Yeah, who are you pointing to? Yeah.
So you were telling the story of the coin and the nugget. So I got two questions. First one, how would we be able to concentrate on the smaller things in life? And how can we apply that to Krishna consciousness?
Okay, what do you mean by smaller things in life? Like,
as in you were saying that heard the coin.
Oh, okay.
Dropped the coin and then he could hear the rabbit. So how can we apply that to our life in terms of things that we do for Krishna?
Yeah, good point. Srila Prabhupada made an interesting statement. He said, first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. So sometimes we're like, all of us are living in life and we're thinking, I'm going to be Krishna conscious. But first we have to even come to the point of being conscious. Sometimes we're so insensitive to the people around us. Sometimes we're so oblivious to what's happening around us. And we think we're going to be Krishna conscious. So first we have to become sensitive. We have to... Sometimes we say things, do things, and it hurts people and we don't even know because we're so insensitive. So how to develop that sensitivity? That means we have to... Basically, the way you develop sensitivity is by becoming more selfless. The more that you're absorbed in yourself, the more you'll be insensitive to others. And the more you become selfless and begin to take the focus away from yourself, you'll be more attentive to everyone and everything around you. So how do we become more attentive to the smaller things in life? Ultimately, by becoming more selfless. And how do we become more selfless? That's why we're chanting, we're reading, we're serving. And by all of these activities, we actually begin to purify the heart. So yes, that's basically what we have to do. Yes.
Thank you very much. I really liked your point around happiness and the Balai Maharaj, that quote.
Yeah.
That it's not happiness with distress, it's actually not happiness.
Yeah.
Just to add to that, what's your thoughts on expectations? Because we're always living our life through, expectation of my work colleagues, expectation of my CEO, expectation of my wife, my parents, and then vice versa, they have expectation on me. And that's just constantly going on in terms of happiness, so, or just living life. But what's the kind of feeling and thoughts around expectation management?
Yeah. One time there was a husband and wife and they were having an argument and the wife was saying, he should become a lawyer. And the father said, no, accountant. It became a big argument. Anyway, then they went to court and then there was the judge and then he was listening. And he said, lawyer, accountant. And then the judge looked at the couple and said, but why don't you just ask your son what he wants to become? And they looked at him as though he was crazy and they said, but he's not even born yet. It's interesting. Even before being born, so much expectation is there. What to speak of once you're born, from parents, from family, from society. Firstly, we must realize that everyone's expectation in our life doesn't hold equal weight. The expectation of some people have more weight than others. So that's the first thing to realize, that we have different relationships. If you try to please everyone in life, you'll end up pleasing no one. So there are some people who we try to meet their expectations because we have an emotional bond with them. So okay, that's there. But ultimately, we are fulfilling the expectations of those who we have a spiritual bond with. Because the expectations of those that we have a spiritual bond with and who actually have spiritual advancement, if we live up to their expectations, then not only will it actually benefit us, but it will actually benefit everyone around us as well. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
So the point is that if you run around trying to please everyone, it's just not going to work. But if you actually fulfill the expectations of those who know what's best for you, or try to live up to the expectations of those who actually know what's best for you, then fulfilling those expectations will actually help you to perfect your own life and help you to actually help those around you. So I think it's a matter of looking in our life at all the different expectations that are there and then kind of dealing with them appropriately. Yeah. Because, yeah, otherwise it's just not manageable. Yeah. Yes.
Hi, Krishna. Thank you for a wonderful class. Just one question regarding service again. So how can we render our service where we are not being very stressful, rather than we are enjoying it, we are happy about rendering the service?
Yeah.
Sometimes you feel like taking up service and doing your best, but then you think that it's getting stressful rather than enjoying it.
Yeah. So how much do we look at quantity of service and how much do we look at quality of service? It's a difficult question to answer because both are important. Like sometimes people say, should I chant 4 rounds really well? Or should I chant 8 rounds but then I may not be so attentive? So like, what do you say? The fact of the matter is, if you chant more rounds, then that will help your quality. And if you chant with quality, that will inspire you to do more quantity. When you're taking medicine, it's not just about taking good tablets, but it's about taking good tablets every day, at every juncture in the day. So it's about quantity and quality. So with service, it's a similar thing, that we look for quantity and quality. However, with quantity, we have to be careful. And the general signs that you're doing too much in terms of quantity is when the service becomes feeling like a burden, is when your relationships are breaking down because you're stressed out because of how much service you have, when the service is no longer feeling inspiring to you but is feeling more like a duty. So these are some warning signs. But basically, I'll come back to the point that I made to Muralidhar Prabhu, which is sadhana. Sadhana has to be strong. If the more stronger your sadhana is, the more capability you'll have to take on more service and do it in a quality way. And the weaker your sadhana is, the more it will be difficult. So as you increase your service, also somehow increase the, if not the quantity, at least the quality of your sadhana. And then you'll find. But I don't think there's any one answer to that question. You just have to see how to adjust. You see, like in spiritual life, we have to constantly adjust. Like when you see someone riding a bike, they never ride in a straight line. They're always going left and right to make sure, you know, they don't fall. So basically going in a line, but it's always adjustment. So it's like that. You may have to reduce service for some time and put more time in reading and chanting, and other times more service. So you have to see. Yeah, balance. Yes, Ash.
In this Kartik month, what's the special meaning of offering the lamp to Lord Krishna?
What's the special meaning of offering the lamp to Lord Krishna? Of course, the Shastras in specific months, they prescribe different activities. The main thing about a lamp is that a lamp signifies illumination. It's not just a ritual to give a lamp or offer a lamp to Krishna. A lamp to Krishna is basically signifying, let me come out of ignorance and come into knowledge. So when we offer a lamp, this is actually what we're offering it to Krishna, but what we're actually meditating on is that this lamp illumines our life. We offer a lamp and we do it in a circular fashion with Krishna in the middle. Again, this is not just a ritual, but what it means is that wherever I may go in life, whatever path I may take, whatever responsibilities or different things may come, Krishna must always be in the center. So like this, the lamp, obviously from a Shastric or scriptural point of view, different items are offered in different ceremonies. So it's prescribed that a lamp is offered in Kartik. But really, Kartik is a month of spiritual advancement. It's that. It's the month of Radharani. It's the month of coming closer to Krishna. And the lamp is especially there in this month because to come closer to Krishna means we have to have illumination, we have to have knowledge, we have to overcome our ignorance, we have to overcome our illusion. Every day when we wake up, it's like we don't have to just wake up the body, but we have to wake up the soul again. Therefore, Gauranga is going around Navadvip, Jiva Jago, Jiva Jago, Gaura Chanda Bole. So some people in the morning when they get up, it's a long process to get going in the morning. But it's not just about getting the physical body going. That's why we always begin the day with sadhana. The first hour of the day for Krishna. To illumine our life and become overcome that ignorance and be again illumined. So the lamp is specifically significant in Kartik because Kartik is the month of spiritual advancement. And spiritual advancement requires illumination. It requires overcoming ignorance, lethargy, laziness, all these things.
Well, I was going to ask just about service. So if we want to take on more but don't feel capable enough, not being able to do a good job letting people down, can you comment on how to approach that situation? Is it give it a go and then pull out if you know, you're not serving well enough?
Or how should we approach it? How should we approach it when we want to take up a service, we have a desire, but we're not sure we'll be able to do it to the best quality? I think to some extent, spiritual life, as I mentioned, is just experimentation. You know, also, we don't know ourselves fully as well. We're in the process of even discovering ourselves. So sometimes we think, I can't do it. But actually, we can do it. And sometimes we think, I can do it. And then we realize, you know what, I can't do it. So how will we actually discover ourselves? By giving it a go. So we must give it a go. Krishna sees the endeavor. Krishna sees that we're trying our best. Yeah? See, this is another teaching of the Gita. that most of the world think that the goal of life is to be the best, but Krishna is saying, just try your best. So we have to try and we have to adjust. Even Srila Prabhupada tried different things. And then some of those things didn't work, so he did something else. Srila Prabhupada tried to start the Krishna consciousness movement in India and it wasn't working, so then he went to America. So he tried, it didn't work out, he tried something else. So we should try, we shouldn't be afraid to experiment. And if we have to step out of a service, then, you know, if we're doing it in all good intention, the devotees will understand. So I would say, let us just experiment. Let's experiment and see. Because our tendency, we don't know. One English writer says, you'll never be able to know how far you can go if you don't risk, unless you risk going too far. So you sometimes, it is a bit of a risk to see, like, okay, how far can I go? But you'll find actually that you have more capacity than we think. I hope that helps. Yes. How do we realize, how does jnana become vigyan or realization? Well, few things are there. First thing is, we must apply the knowledge. So we must ask ourselves, how much am I living by the teachings of the Gita? How much am I actually applying what Krishna is saying in my life? When I hear a class, how much of it do I actually bring into reality as a change? Unless you apply knowledge, knowledge will never go deeper. But when you begin implying the knowledge, then it actually you get realization, oh my God, this actually works. So the first thing is, we have to apply. That's very, very important. Another thing is, we have to pray. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs Sanatan Goswami in so many things, and then at the end of the discourse, Sanatan Goswami goes to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he says, now Lord, I pray for your mercy so that all the instructions that you've given me sink deep into my heart. So we also pray to Krishna that all these things that I'm hearing, all these things that I've acquired, this knowledge, allow me to actually realize it within my heart. So prayer is very powerful. And the other thing that helps is sharing the knowledge with others. When we share the knowledge with others, not just mechanically, but in a way that we're actually trying to share our experiences of it genuinely, then what happens is Krishna gives you more and more realization of it as well. Yes. See, ultimately all of the realization comes from Krishna. Like Krishna says in Gita, Desham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Pritipurvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Dadami Buddhi, I give the intelligence by which you can come to me. Then in the next verse, Krishna says, Aham Agyana Jamtamaha Nasayam Yatma Bhava Sto Jnana Deepena Bhashvata. Krishna says, I, dwelling within the heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So it's really Krishna in our heart that is doing the work. to give us that enlightenment, to give us that, remove the ignorance, give us the intelligence. But our endeavors, our prayers, our sincere desire is what instigates Krishna to then give us that realization. So we have to do our part. Therefore, endeavor and mercy. We must endeavor to do these things, and then it will become more deep realization. Okay, that's gone on a long time. Shall we finish then? Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.